Well, greetings everyone out in Turdville. It is Thursday, the 7th of July, and this podcast takes the place of A2A. My apologies to everyone that was listening earlier. We're about 10 minutes into A2A when all of a sudden the internet connection here in Turdville went out on us. A big storm in the area last night, power out all over town, and I guess in hooking everything back up, all of a sudden the internet went down for a couple hours. So David Morgan has graciously offered to join me for today's podcast and address some of the questions we were going to cover anyway. David, thank you. I really appreciate your patience and your willingness to come back on.
It takes what it takes. I'm more than willing to press on. Just get, you know, just think if we ever have an EMP or a solar flare, we might be out longer than this. Anyway, all jokes aside, I'm ready.
All right. And again, for everybody that isn't familiar with David, I mean, he's been following silver for 40 years. He is a renowned expert in silver and the miners, gold too. He is a publisher of the Morgan Report, and you really ought to consider buying a copy of the great book, The Silver Manifesto. It's right here on my desk. David, the reason why we're going to do an A2A, one, we hadn't had a chance to talk for a while, but I want to take everybody back to the podcast of about a week ago, where in the podcast, in the Vault Daily podcast, I mentioned that you and I had spoken earlier in the day, and you had made note of the COMEX registered silver being well below 30 million ounces and how, in your experience, that never failed to produce a rally. And I mean, like that evening, it started to take off. And everybody listening to this probably remembers that and thought, man, we got to talk to David Morgan. So anyway, with that as a backdrop, tell everybody about that and why that, you know, has, you know, whatever you think, why that is that has been the case for so many years. And what do you think going forward?
Well, experience pays. I mean, you know, you can't learn less in life. And, you know, careful observation and, you know, you get to learn certain things just because you've been there a long time. And that certainly is the case with myself. And just as a review, most of your A2A members know this, but there's two categories on the exchanges for the metals. One is eligible and one is registered. And there's a huge chasm between the two of them. Eligible is people that store their 1,000-ounce bars with a firm, which is an approved COMEX warehouse, which is usually a bank. One's a depository, the Delaware Depository. And as a side note, I've been through the entire place with the owner, John Potts, years ago. Regardless, so that silver requires a physical piece of paper to be sent, signed, and put back in the system for any of that silver to be able to be sold. So what the one to really focus on is the register category, which is the amount of silver that the dealers have in physical form to be able to put on the market. And I've just seen it again and again. Every time we're below 30 million ounces, we get a rise in the silver price. And I called you up because I liked your article, and I made note of that and mentioned it to you, and you know, passed it on, and here we are. Where are we going forward? Far higher. Where are we going in the short term? Short-term calls are always difficult. Where the sentiment's too high, we're overbought, and chances are more likely, a higher probability that we'll see some type of pullback, consolidation, profit taking, name it what you want. It'll have all those names, manipulation, whatever. I think we're going to come back. Where are we going to get support? I don't know. I just did an update for my subscribers and gave them an outline of where the support levels are, and it showed them graphically where that is. But it remains to be determined. The other big offset that you know and I know you've been writing about is Deutsche Bank. You know, what if it does a Lehman, which it's likely to do? Is it absolutely going to happen? We don't know. But were it to happen, I don't think it's totally priced into the market. I mean, we've all been taught again and again that the market anticipates the future. I agree with that. But it's already discounted the future? Maybe, somewhat. But in the case of a Deutsche Bank failure, I don't think it's discounted that. So were that to occur, or something like that to occur in the next, you know, week, month, months, the end of the summer, you would probably see a pretty big run into the metals. I mean, serious run in the metals. I think it would be, I don't like to use the word knee-jerk reaction, it would be a reaction or overreaction to reality. that the banking system at large is a massive, huge failure based on their inability to, one, tell the truth, and two, manage risk. So it's tough. You know, how do you say that we're going to get a consolidation here when you got something like Deutsche Bank hanging out there in the Netherlands? It's tough.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that's the thing. These folks that are calling for silver to dip back down and gold to make new lows and all this stuff, nobody wants to even mention, I guess, the fundamental factor of negative interest rates, you know, $15 trillion of negative interest rate debt in the world, and Brexit and the fiasco and how that impacts the euro and all that stuff. Everybody just wants to look at the charts. But I want to double back to the COMEX for a second, David, because it's like my little mission is I'm doing everything I can to end what I call the paper derivative pricing scheme, because it's a scam. You know, these banks sell metal that they don't have in paper, and the specs buy metal that they don't intend to take delivery of. So how that has any effect on the actual metal, I don't understand. I wrote yesterday, getting back to the registered eligible thing, you know, we open interest in gold is up 40 some odd percent this year, and silver it's up 25%. At least in gold, there has been about a 30% increase in the total vault of amount of gold allegedly held in those COMEX vaults. But in silver, it's gone down from 160 million to 150 million ounces. And the registered that you mentioned was 40 million ounces at the beginning of the year, and now it's 24. All the while, open interest has gone up by 25%. Besides illustrating what I say is a fraud, does open interest issuance while vault stocks are going down, I mean, does it mean anything? I mean, to you personally, I mean, do you think anything of that?
Yeah, I do. First of all, to retrace a little bit on the open interest, if you go back several years, basically you would go from X to Y, and I'm not trying to be cute here. So X would be when the sell-off happened, the banks win, they pick the pockets of the small traders and the trading funds, and the game starts over.
Yep.
So you had like a sine wave. You'd go to the top of open interest to the bottom of open interest, back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And those numbers were pretty reliable. Now, they changed over the years. When I first started, you could almost trade silver to the penny using the commitment of traders. But this was well before the SLV or any ETFs, believe it or not. But that's history. It's you know. So that's a statement. You can take it or leave it. As more and more interest came into silver, the open interest levels between X and Y changed. They shifted up another level. However, what's taken place over the last few years, and it's probably been less than two, could be more, I'd have to look, is that the open interest not only has gone much higher, and it's hard to get a target because it keeps increasing, but it's, well, who's taking the other side? Since the banks are massively short all the time and net short constantly, who's taking the other side and how strong are they? And the answer is the Shanghai Gold and Silver Exchanges. That's who. And how strong are they financially? Well, they're probably about as strong as these banks.
Yeah.
So now it's all of a sudden it's been like, you know, a 180-pound guy in one of those MMA fights, and I don't know much about that, but as an analogy, a 180-pound guy that's, you know, worked out for a week versus a guy that's 240 and that's his livelihood. I mean, you're in it's a mixed match.
Yeah.
Fair match. That's an analogy for what's happened in the COMEX for years and years and years. You've got trading funds in the public versus these banks that have unlimited power to control the market. But now, as an analogy, you've got this 240-pound guy that makes his living at it, and you got this Oriental guy on the other side that might be only 200 pounds, but he's lightning fast and has 12 things that this other guy's never seen before. I mean, that might be a bit of an exaggeration, but I'm trying to set this metaphor in the context that people can understand how dynamic these markets are and how much it's changed in the last few years. So now we have more than a level playing field. We have a playing field that maybe the other side might be swallowing a bit hard, because as the open interest goes up, and I think you pointed out, in fact, I think that's why I called you, is that when we got to that XY and we got up to the Y and the sell-off should have taken place, it started to and it didn't get very far. Trading's changed. Trading stopped. Somebody's on the other side saying, no, you do this hold on me and I got out of it and I just kicked you somewhere. You know what I mean? I hope this analogy is working for you.
No, that's okay.
And so this is where we're at. And So I have to put that into my thinking, and everyone that follows Marcus closely needs to do the same, not to use my metaphor or my analogy, just the fact that we have to be on our toes probably more than ever before because things are happening at a faster pace. The crumbling of the empire is accelerating, and these bankers probably don't know exactly what to do, but they are good thinkers. They are used to their power and control, and so they have a scenario set up where it's A, B, C, D, and E. In other words, if it doesn't go the way they want it to and this happens, they have a plan for that. If that doesn't happen and this happens, they have a plan for that. So these guys are not easy to outsmart, but we all know, or I'll speak for myself, I know that in the long run, all manipulations come to an end.
Yeah, yeah. To that end, let me ask you about this. I had a guy, you know David Jensen?
Yes.
He emailed me yesterday. And we were trading email back and forth. And he said, you know, you ought to take a look at this. He had noticed, you know, there's this site, didthesystemcollapse.com, which is just like a one-page thing comparing the spot price on the LBMA versus the spot price in Shanghai. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, for the last week or so, and maybe this site's got it wrong, who knows, but for the last week or so, there has been a consistent somewhere between 23 and 27 ounce premium on the spot price of Shanghai versus LBMA. And he was kind of doing some math about, you know, how much it would take to arbitrage that. But if anything, what do you suppose that consistent premium may be telling us something too? Do you think any much of that?
Yeah, I mean, you can't discount it entirely. I think I know David, and I think I've spoken with him a couple times, and I know what he does, and he's a very good thinker. And I'll go along with that. I think it absolutely means something. How big a deal do you want to make out of it is up to the individual. I make enough that, yeah, if you want the real deal, you're going to have to pay up. I mean, yeah. You know, as many of us in the industry have said, and almost gets boring to hear it again, but if you're buying silver off the exchange, you're buying raw 1,000-ounce bars that are never 1,000 ounces. These are poured bars and they're roughly 1,000 ounces. And the exact weight is stamped into them with a physical, like, chisel, you know, you pound it with a hammer and tell you how many the exact weight is. And so that's silver. That's what the market is when you look at the exchanges. So if you want to make it into a 100-ounce bar, 10-ounce bar, silver round, or silver eagle, you have to buy that, ship it, smelt it, extrude it, stamp it, and retransport it. So does that add to the cost? Yes. Yeah. Yes, it does.
Imagine that. Yeah, do you
19 flat, and I'm paying $21.50 for a silver eagle. Well, that's right.
Yeah.
Because you're buying a silver eagle, you're not buying a lump of silver.
Yeah.
So that's point number one. Point number two is that just in the commercial market where we've got this, let's say, $3 spread or whatever it is, let's see, paper losers. So we've got a 1975 versus 1996. How many pennies?
21.
That? 21 cents. That's very reasonable as far as a spread between the fiction and the reality. And that's going to. So I think it's a point well taken. I think it's something to watch because I think it's a good indicator that as that spread increases, it will determine ahead of time or real time that we are seeing a more and more squeeze into the, you know, paper paradigm versus the physical reality.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking too as you were talking. And maybe that's an indicator of a beginning of a lack of faith in the paper market to actually get you your metal.
Well, I want to interject something here.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, I think, and I say think, don't know, that there will be a time where there's the run to gold, run to silver. The silver will probably go into the record books at some point. And what will happen is there's a lot of dealers that will say, you know, you got to wait 2 weeks, you got to wait 3 weeks, you got to wait 4 weeks. And all that's well and good, and they're well-meaning and honest. I mean, most of these guys are. There's some that aren't. We know that. Regardless, they will, in good faith, lock in a price for you on an extended delivery and tell you up front that you've got to wait. The problem is, and most people don't know, is that for all the retail dealers out there, almost all of them drop ship, which means that they just have a website that says they'll sell you silver, and they have no inventory. Mm-hmm. And what they do is they go to the wholesale market. And there's very few wholesalers, and I know most of them on a first-name basis. Not all of them, but most of them. And so there's, you know, XYZ, you know, bullion and da-da-da, you know, the names. I'm not going to favor anybody here. So you've done business with them and you say, you know what, my mother wants in. She's got 50,000 bucks. I'm putting her in the silver market. I've got to wait 4 weeks. These guys have never failed to deliver before. But what they don't understand is that there is a physical limit to how much silver is out there. And these wholesalers may not be able to fill all orders. So what could happen, I'm not saying would happen, is you get in a situation where you've got a dealer that you've always had faith in, and they cannot acquire it from the wholesaler because it just isn't there anymore. Now, will that take place? I don't know, but I want to prepare people for how the market really works so that they can think ahead. You really want to be buying in a quiet market. You ahead of the game. You don't want to be buying after the fact, because you may be running in on a big jump up thinking that, you know, everything's fine, and yeah, there's a delay because the market's tight and they've got to, you know, punch out these rounds or whatever, and you're going to get it. And in some cases you will. I'm not saying it's going to be like instantaneous and overnight and everyone that puts in an order it says they've got to wait 3 or 4 weeks isn't going to get it. That's not what I'm saying. What I am saying is there's a limit, and when the spread goes in time where you see that there's that kind of congestion, be careful.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's smart. What I keep telling people is, you know, the physical metal is priced as if it's abundant, but what's abundant is the paper derivative in all of its forms, whether it's the futures contract or the unallocated account or the SLV or all that stuff. And man, when the music stops is not when you want to be trying to get your hands on the real deal, because everybody else will be trying to get their hands on it too.
Yeah. I've probably overdone it, but you know, it's the, you know, trying to put a fire hose, a fire hose through a garden hose. It's just not going to work.
Yep. David, I want to thank you for coming and answering a few extra questions well after the fact, after our internet failed. But I do want to, as like a final point, it has been a remarkable year. And I know at the Morgan Report, and a lot of your expertise is not only in silver, but in the miners. We've had this great run in the miners already. What is your just basic advice to anybody out there that maybe they've had a few, or they've just been waiting for a pullback and the pullback never comes, but they think metal prices are headed higher and they want to be in the miners? What are you telling your subscribers is the best strategy going forward?
Well, dollar cost averaging always works as long as it's a bull market. So, you know, most people will not buy high to go higher, but I gave this to a consulting client just a few days ago. But let's take a hypothetical, wouldn't be hypothetical, there's several examples, but where a stock goes from $2 to $152. That's a big move. How many new highs do you think that stock has made?
Yeah, about 100.
Lots of them. Yeah. Hundreds. Who knows? Tons. And so the idea, and I was taught this by Bill O'Neill himself, the original founder of Investor's Business Daily, and he may have more money than Buffett, I don't know. He's a fairly quiet man, and he's not a braggart at all, but he knows what he's doing. So when you buy a high, and it makes another high, and another high, and another high, are you wrong to buy the high? The answer is no. But nobody teaches that except him. I mean, Bill O'Neill's about the only one. So I had a kind of a paradigm or a shift or that aha moment or whatever you want to call it after taking his course back when, I don't know, 30-something years ago. And it doesn't mean you got to wait for a high. But the idea is that people just don't have, and this is me speaking of others, but it's been my experience that people just don't have what it takes in the reality of investing to see what can be done. Once the move starts, I think they've lost it, because the amateur's opinion is you got to get in at the bottom or you got to get in relatively low. Don't. The biggest money ever made in the silver market that I'm aware of was a guy that traded futures for a living and lost his butt. And he took a year off and he studied every trade he made and looked at what he did wrong. And he came back in during the 1980s market. You know what he did? He got in at like $18 silver and out at $35 silver and retired for life.
There you go. And he hit the bottom or the top.
Above, 18 was the highest price it had ever seen in 15 years, because it started in 1979 at 6. It had tripled from there, but he knew markets. He'd studied and he understood it and he had a plan ahead of time. Now, I'm not saying for everybody to do that. I'm just trying to illustrate my point. So I'll finish off with, you know, we love to get more members. You get to watch me make my trades. We only have the premium service open. The best thing you can do is just get on our free email list. You do not have to pay me. Just go to themorganreport.com, click the right-hand box with your name and an email address. You'll get on our mailing list. You will get worthwhile updates every weekend. Yes, we do advertise on that list because, believe it or not, I still have to pay the bills as well, and I put two girls through college in a pretty expensive colleges. Anyway, the point I'm making is that get on the free list. You'll get a lot of good information. And if you're so inclined to really want to specialize in making some money in the resource sector, because we do a lot more than just silver, certainly the Morgan Report is something that you can get on board. You have a 60-day opportunity to take everything off the website and cancel. And we do have people that do that. I don't like it. I consider it stealing, but I can't do a thing about it. And that's the contract. In other words, you can come in and get everything, milk it for all it's worth, and then you decide it's not for you. That's fine. That doesn't happen very often. But the point is, I want people to be sure that they want it. So you can come in, and I can't describe everything that's there. It'd take me all year. I mean, there's more on that website than anybody else in the industry. Almost everybody's got a $1,500 newsletter, and that's what we used to give out for $129. And they're friends of mine. I mean, these guys are pretty good people, but they're not providing the level of service that we have provided. And we're paying, you know, we're asking for 500, one-third of what, you know, Marin's asking, Casey Research, and you know, all these other outfits, Agora and all outfits. I mean, they're charging $1,500 for something that, you know, is much less there's much less to what they provide than what we provide. I'll put it that way.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And really, for, I mean, if anybody's out there and you think, okay, well, the bottom was 14, now we're 19 and change, and it sure looks like things have fundamentally changed with negative interest rates and Brexit and everything else. I mean, what better time than now to be a subscriber at the Morgan Report? So I encourage everybody to check it out.
Well, thank you.
David, thanks, my man. It is I really appreciate you being flexible with your schedule so we can still get something on the record for everybody. And hopefully we will do this again soon at even higher highs.
Okay. Sounds great. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, David. And thanks, everybody, for your patience. And thanks for listening.